Whoa! Pardon me. Oh, oh, gosh. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Welcome, Goofsters, to episode 8 of the Two Goofs podcast, the 12-part series where two best friends relive their time as costume performers in the Disneyland character department. I'm Adam, one half of your goofy hosting team, who's just living the dream. And with me as always, to bring you the goof, the whole goof, and nothing but the goof, it's Jeff.
That's me, I'm Jeff.
We are excited to be back with you once again to talk Disney parks. You know, to start out the show, we just want to offer a heartfelt yuck to all the current cast members of the Disneyland character department who worked through this summer season that's slowly coming to a close. Big crowds, high heat, minimal pay. We salute you.
Although the interesting thing that I did hear is that it's a surprisingly low summer, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's nice.
Is that possibly because of the anticipation of Star Wars Land. And like, Adam, if you remember, like when California Adventure opened, they were so convinced that the park was going to be a zoo that they didn't allow any cast members to sign themselves or their families in for an extended period. And same thing with annual pass holders. So apparently this summer, the same thing started where cast members were not allowed to sign even themselves into the park for fear of overcrowding due to Star Wars Land. And I guess it's led to a fairly slow summer.
Yeah.
Which I should point out, and I don't know if you ever knew this, Adam, but just as a side note, since we already mentioned it, in summer, traditionally, and it's probably this week, one of these weeks right in the middle of August, traditionally there would be at least one, if not 2 weeks, where we would sell out every single day. So like between 7 and 14 straight days of sellouts. And a sellout to Disneyland is 78,000 people. They close the doors because they have to allow for at least 6,000 potential annual pass holders to still come in. So 84,000 is actually the max capacity of Disneyland pre-Star Wars Land. That's a busy day, my friend.
Yeah, and I always feel like, you know, we're Disneyland alumni, but we should send a shout out to the Disney World crew as well, because they have to deal with humidity in addition to the heat. So I can't even imagine. Florida ain't no joke. This time around, we have a deep dive into the behind-the-scenes cast member merriment, as it was, but before we get to those stories, I found a Mental Floss article from 2015 titled 15 Secrets of Disney Park Characters that had a few items I thought Jeff and I could confirm or debunk in a new segment we're calling Goof Truth.
Nice, nice. He doesn't run these by me first, folks. He just comes up with them on his own.
Jeff just shows up. He's along for the ride.
It's so true.
It's the royal we. So here's one. Says, even the Little Mermaid has to pay her dues playing Winnie the Pooh. Performers hired for face roles are first trained to portray fully costumed characters, then spend several weeks greeting kids while wearing giant furry suits. After this probation period, face characters train for their human roles. What do you say, Jeff?
Total falsehood. No, not even close to true. However, don't get me wrong, there are some that are approved to do both, but it was a very rare. I mean, one, the pay scale is radically different for the two. I don't recall ever seeing the trainees going through that.
Yeah, never had an occasion where there was, you know, some new princess, you know, getting in costume.
No.
And then you'd see her a few weeks later, now she's Snow White or whatever. That's just not how that
works. The one thing, although you said it's from a while ago, because I was thinking about it too, because I just met somebody who just got hired in as an entertainment host, and she was kind of sharing some of her experiences, is that everything here, of course, has the caveat of being 15 years old. So who knows what has changed in between, but at least from our experience,
Now, the next one, fur character costumes could weigh as much as 47 pounds, the beast. And in 2005, the last year for which comprehensive data is available. They were blamed for 282 injuries. That year, character performers across the four parks that made up Walt Disney World reported 773 injuries total. 49 reports cited the heavy costume heads as the cause of injury.
So wait, what was that said, the head or the whole costume?
It said that the fur character costumes could weigh as much as 47 pounds. So they're talking about the whole costume.
Way understatement. Way understatement. I mean, the Beast, well, which you did for, what did you say, one half of one set? The Beast is nothing compared to Sully. Nikki was talking about Buzz Lightyear. Yeah, there's definitely some heavier costumes than that. In fact, they would try, like with Sully, they would try and shift the weight around so that you could carry more weight because it was on your hips and stuff like that. But as far as injuries, that's definitely accurate. I mean, OSHA is no friend to the department.
Now, I don't think either of us really were ever seriously injured, Jeff, no?
I feel like something happened, but I can't quite recall. I mean, you know, when you're 19 and you're 6'3", you can put up with a lot, so.
All right, well, the majority of it was pretty accurate, but those were a few that jumped out at me. I was like, I don't know about that. So now on to the topic at hand. We're calling this episode Cast Members Only. What does that mean exactly? Well, as with any corporation, there are special events set up by the company to share some goodwill with the employees, you know? The Walt Disney Company was no exception, and the mouse's equivalent of a company picnic took many forms. We will get into that. So the first event that we wanted to bring up, which is pretty self-explanatory in its title, and that was an event called Cast Blast. Now, the interesting thing about this, at least in my experience, is that I hired in, you know, in 2000, as we discussed. So I was there for Cast Blast 2000, naturally taking place on Wednesday, November 1st of 2000. Why do I know that? Because I still have my lanyard and tag that you had to go apply for. This wasn't just like a scan your card and you're going to be able to come in. It's you had to actually sign up and tell them you were going to be there. But this starts, it actually has a schedule printed on the back, and it's 5:45 a.m. There's a photo shoot where they wanted the cast members to arrive.
Right, before the park opens.
And then after that, there was Cynthia Harris, who was she the president of Disneyland, Jeff? Was that her official title?
Yep.
Yeah, at the time, she was welcoming us. They had a whole area that was called the Taste of Disneyland, where you could go and sample some of the food they were offering. I actually was able to pull up, this was interesting, on the Mouse Info message board thread from October of 2000, as people were getting ready for this event, asking questions about it. This was the description: as one of many of Dave's CMs, I don't know what the CM stands for, cast members, I guess.
Yeah.
But he just says, Cast Blast is cool. It's just a bunch of CMs having fun while the managers and leads work. Or anyone who didn't get the time off. So, like I said, there was a lot of stuff going on during the day with this particular event, but really it was kicking off later in the evening, you know, so it's telling here 8 to 11 p.m. was the official time frame for the cast celebration. Jeff, what do you remember was the main attraction for Cast Blast? Because you went in 1999.
Right. Well, because it definitely changed. Because obviously the challenge is you're not going to close the park, because that's what we do, you know? And then it's tough, so it's like you don't start it until after the park closes. And also for Disneyland, our season kind of goes summer to summer. So, like, the end of summer is the end of our year. And, you know, a lot of cast members were there on seasonal anyway, so they would be leaving and stuff like that. I feel like the second one, I'm trying to remember if it took place in California Adventure or in Disneyland, but it was kind of just like a night in the park, if I recall. Did you go?
I did. Well, obviously, I signed up for it. I got it there. But that's the thing.
You signed up, but yeah, you hadn't been speaking like you had been there.
Well, that was the thing. I was trying to think back. I was like, Cast Blast, what do I remember about the event?
We probably went together, didn't we? We must have, right?
I have to believe we did, honestly. But that's what I'm saying. Like, when I looked over the schedule of events, I was like, nothing there sounds super exciting.
And I think that was the thing, if I remember.
Yeah.
Especially because the first one was such a big deal, and then the second one was like, really?
Because this is what I understood. Like, a few of the perks where there was an exclusive pin for cast members only. So I saw this message board. There were people like, hey, can anybody get me one of the exclusive cast member pins? Like, I don't know, I collect them myself, but I'll see if there's somebody I work with who doesn't care, you know, stuff like that. So if you're into pin collecting, they still are, I think.
Are they still big?
Yeah.
It was the Pokemon card of that era.
And then there was also free food.
Yeah, I remember that.
Now, the question I had for you, Jeff, was, do you recall, were there characters working in costume for Cast Blast? Does that ring a bell? Was that like a shift that was being offered?
I seem to recall like a photo location. I do remember more like the Christmas parties, where they would definitely have photo locations, but like where it was almost mandatory. Whereas this one, I feel like there was, again, this one's a little more hazy than the 99 one.
This is another question I have for you, speaking of 99, because one of the things I read on that board, basically they explained that at the 1999 Cast Blast, you could go into Star Tours, yeah, and instead of playing Star Tours, you could sit in the seat and they were playing the live-action Dick Tracy movie on a loop.
Yep.
Did you go to that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did. So jealous.
Yeah, so the interesting thing, or not interesting, it was actually kind of lame, actually, when you did it, is that, so all of the motions, and even Rex, the robot, all of it was exactly the same. Like, it was the same motions, he said the same things, but instead of the movie, you got, like, Dick Tracy. And I don't even think the audio was, I think the audio was the original audio, it wasn't the Dick Tracy audio. So it was really weird. And like the big one was during the one, and it was not synced up. So it was just a goof that they did, like, intentionally, was the one nightclub scene where Madonna kind of does her like shimmy shake sort of a thing, uh-huh, was right when we went to light speed. So that was kind of fun. So the interesting thing about the 99 one that I can speak to then is that, so it was exclusively Tomorrowland. So the park wasn't quite closed yet, but they closed off Tomorrowland, and Tomorrowland was taken over by the cast members. This was back when Rocket Rods was still there in place of the People Mover, and what they did, but the Rocket Rods was such a dumb ride. So what they did was they added little laser tag targets, and they gave us all little guns, but the bummer was, you couldn't tell if you ever hit because everyone was shooting at the same thing. So did I hit that? Was that you? Was that? Nobody could tell. It didn't keep score or anything. It was just like one extra thing.
So it was a prototype of the Buzz Lightyear ride.
Right, exactly.
But okay.
But the best one I thought was Space Mountain. What they did for Space Mountain was, I believe the first thing that they did when you first arrived is they turned on all of the work lights. So basically every light was on, and so you could see the track in front of you. So it felt more like a traditional roller coaster. So that was kind of cool. It was a different way to experience Space Mountain. Then after that, they turned off all of the lights. So it was pitch black dark inside there while you're going on the ride.
That's pretty awesome, because I don't think they did anything that cool for 2000, which is why we're not remembering it. So it's like they had some great ideas first time around, and then we just had to deal with it. But still, seeing Dick Tracy in Star Tours would have been amazing. So I'm glad you got to experience that at the very least.
Well, again, that part wasn't all that amazing, to be honest with you. But and I think that's what they turned it into, because I don't know, Adam, if you got to go to any of the Christmas parties.
No.
But Christmas parties were very much like what they turned Cast Blast into, where Christmas parties was basically just on a weekday during the off season, so before you get into the holiday peak of Christmas time, after the park would close, then the rest of the park would be open just to employees. Usually what would happen is you could sign in even before that. So you would kind of come in and then everybody else would leave, but, you know, the cast members would stick around and they'd have some like stuff around. It was mostly like, because I went with one of our friends, even after I had left, I was her guest after I'd left Disney. And yeah, it was kind of just like, you know, a night in the park. Cast Blast, they tried to add a couple of extra, like, hey, we're going to also do this and also do this. Oh, and I completely forgot. The best part about Cast Blast was the raffle. Do you know about the raffle?
I vaguely remember it. Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, I don't know about the raffle in the later years. I've never won anything, so I don't want to say like I won this or anything like that. But just looking Yeah, I remember I was so excited, especially because I had hired in July, and then this was, rolling around in October, November. And so I was still fairly new, and I looked at the list of raffle prizes, and you had some fairly basic ones, like they're, I mean, not basic, they were still awesome. They were like Disney Letterman's jacket that was like a $150 jacket, and they had like all of these different pins and all of these different like collectible things that they were giving away. But then the highlight was the experiences. Almost all of them were exclusively about Fantasmic. I remember there was one prize that was you can watch Fantasmic from the tech booth, which is not a great, that's okay. It's a little bit different. The tech booth is kind of just in the back of the crowd a little bit. You could watch Fantasmic from the balcony of Club 33. You could watch from the balcony of Club 33.
Been there, done that.
You could watch Fantasmic from one of the light towers on the ground there, where they have, I guess, the spotlight operators. So you can sit
Oh,
next to a
cool.
spotlight operator. And then the highlight, you could watch Fantasmic from the mill on Tom Sawyer's Island. So literally, you would have been inside the show itself.
Oh, that would
So
have been
that, I
amazing.
was like,
Yeah.
what? That was pretty awesome. I didn't win, though, but it
Oh,
sounded
sorry, Jeff.
awesome.
It's only a dream. But speaking of winning, so Cast Blast was for everybody that worked at the park, right? Everybody was invited. You could get your opportunity to celebrate and just have a little fun with everybody being a cast member. But for the character department itself, there was also an awards ceremony, a very interesting. I would love to know the origins of it all. And Jeff, I'm sure you've got some history, but it was this event that I never attended, and I don't know why, but it was called AFASAB. And Jeff, how do you spell that?
Our legal title as costume character is pageant helper. So it was the annual pageant helper SAB. I don't know. Something awards banquet. What's the S? Seasonal? Season? I don't know.
But it was like APHASA.
SAB. Or
Yeah,
something. An
AFASAB.
A. Whatever. Yeah. So anyway, and as I understand, because the character department, has been around since the park's been around, and it used to be about 15 or 20 people that were in that department, and at one point they said, like, at the end of summer, they're like, hey, why don't we celebrate like surviving a summer? So they like went out to dinner, and then the next year there was 20 or 30 of them, and then eventually it grew to the point where they like got a ballroom at a local hotel, and it just kind of grew and grew and grew from there. I don't know if they're still able to pull it off now that the department's as big as it is, but I know by the time Adam and I were there, they would get a ballroom at the Disneyland Hotel, but then the Disneyland Hotel ended up being too expensive, so they ended up going at a different hotel.
So what was the event, Jeff? What was it that everybody was gathering for, and what did people do in the run-up to AFASAB?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. And one, like, it's somewhat of the culture of not only Disneyland, but especially the department, is that the majority of the people there are going to be 18, 19, 20-year-olds. You had to be 18, but outside of that, you got a lot of college kids, especially young college kids. So there was definitely a, like, almost post-high school environment a lot of times. Not as much with the veterans, but a lot of the times with the newcomers. And so AFASAB definitely had a prom feel to it. Like, everybody dressed up. Again, it was in the ballroom of a hotel. They had like a relatively nice dinner based on college kid standards. And they did like an awards show for the year that had passed. There was dancing that took place afterwards. There was always, the crazy stories. I'm sure if Nikki came back on, she could tell you the post AFASAB party stories, but clearly Adam and I were not the ones going to those sort of parties.
Well, Jeff,
So,
what were some of the actual categories for the awards?
well, it was funny, and again, I don't pretend that this is not something that I have struggled with, but I may have mentioned this before, is that that was definitely a frustration of mine from working at Disneyland, is that I felt like I really put a lot of work and effort into my performance, and that I didn't quite get the appreciation or recognition that I felt I deserved. And so for me, that was another kind of like moment, is that every single year they would have the Mickey height of the year and the Pluto height of the year and the Goofy height of the year. And then they'd have like Host of the Year and Rookie of the Year and then Character of the Year. And of course, I was never even nominated, which always kind of bugged me. So I guess it was my last year there. We mentioned my one friend, the guy that was Brer Bear, who grabbed me as the Queen of Hearts and called me an embarrassment and stuff like that. And he was one of those characters who thought this was the easiest job in the world. So he wasn't exactly a performer, but he was always talking about that he deserved to win Character of the Year. So one year, as kind of a rebellion, let me put it that way, we decided to launch a pre-AFISAB campaign to elect him Character of the Year. So we put up ads and we put up flyers and we did like a whole promotion. Actually, speaking of, I don't know if you were there, Adam, for some of the like training that we had to go through because of the OSHA sanctions against our people getting injured. So one of them, if you guys are familiar with the green zone and the red zone and the yellow zone, as far as lifting is concerned, and that you need to always be in the green zone and never be in the red zone. If you ever have to bend over, you're supposed to build a bridge, which that was our campaign slogan, is building a bridge to a better tomorrow. And it just show pictures of him on a bridge, just saying, my fellow characters. And we got quite a talking to over that. But it sounds like, and again, I don't know what in the last 15 years, but at least in the years that immediately followed, that became a thing, is that people were actually campaigning for the title of Character of the Year, which did somewhat defeat the point, because it was supposed to be not only good fun, but also appreciating the people that work hard and stuff like that. And yeah, it may have gotten out of hand.
So AFISAB, a fun time, maybe not for Jeff, but for everybody else. It's all good. It's all good, Jeff. You are a goofy of the millennium for us. Okay?
There you go.
We love you. That's an event, again, for whatever reason, I never attended. I never liked school dances to begin with, so maybe that's why. But there was an event that I did get to attend, which was pretty unique. It was something that happens annually since 1989. It's called Minnie's Moonlit Madness. Now, I went, I believe, in 2004 with our friend Nikki, as mentioned previously. And the idea of Minnie's Moonlit Madness is it's actually a charity event. So it is for primarily Disney employees. However, you can bring along family and friends if they're willing to, you know, chalk up the $100 to participate. So what you do is you have a four-person team and you have this essentially competition throughout the night when, again, the park is closed late into the evening. And so the way that the competition is established there is that you start out with a trivia section. So it's kind of you're gaining points. You know, there's however many teams. You know, I think at one point I saw like a report about be like 400 teams. It's just
wow.
However many people want to participate, and it's gained steam over the years. So you do the trivia section and you get to test your knowledge. But then the real event is a literal scavenger hunt all over the park, which also involves trivia and things of that nature, except that now you are tied to your teammates with a rope. So imagine like a three-legged race all over Disneyland. Now, you're not attached at the legs. Essentially, it's like a 2 or 3 foot rope between each of you, so you have a little bit of room to move around. But the way to actually qualify at each of the stations where a cast member would be set up, like, for example, I remember spending a lot of time in New Orleans Square and being there and, you know, trying to win our specific events. Or it was basically like, you know, you show up, you kind of wait your turn to answer a trivia question or put the lyrics to a song in order or something, and then you get a stamp. I can't remember if it was like a stamp or a sticker or what, but you basically were trying to get as many as you could so you could turn it in before the event was over. And then if you accomplish more than others, then you were eligible to win some type of award. Again, my group, I mean, we were there and we were just kind of like goofing around the whole time. So really, like, I think we stayed like an hour and went to a few locations. They're like, yeah, my feet are getting sore, and it's kind of weird being tied to you, so why don't we just call it a night, guys? But I did attend, and it was, like, for me, I feel like that was a little bit more fun than Cast Blast, obviously, only because it was a little bit more crazy. There, it just felt like a wilder atmosphere, because it's just that madness really set in, because you're like, what? Look at all these people flying around tied to each other, and you got to be careful that, one, you're not pulling your teammate over, you know, you got to be in sync, and two, that you're not getting tied up with other groups that are trying to pass by you in the dark, so, yeah, so, I mean, there's that element of danger in Minnie's Moonlit Man. Madness, you know? But either way, it was just, you know, it's one of those things that if you know somebody that works at the park, you might ask him about it if it's something you're interested in participating in, because it's something that still goes on to this day. So kind of interesting. Now, Jeff, I know, participated in a different type of charity fundraiser. What can you tell us about this particular performance piece, Jeff?
Yeah, especially for me as a performer, because also might have been when I was trying to break into doing shows as well. So figuring that I got a chance to perform would really put me out there. We did a charity fundraising show called Flashback. I feel like it was an annual thing. I mean, I only did it 1 year, but it was in the Hyperion Theater, where they, I don't know what they have now, but they had Aladdin there for a while over in California Adventure.
I think it's Frozen now.
It's Frozen there now? Show, okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's a legit theater, and it's a beautiful, big, huge theater. And basically what happened is I think we had six teams, and each team put together like a musical show where each one, like, they had a story and it had like different musical numbers, and we all were singing and dancing. And
was it an original work, like somebody just put it together, or you were performing scenes from other?
No, it was an original. We had to come up with an original show, but it was not original music. So, like, we did, I don't remember exactly what our show was. I remember I was just in the chorus, which was another, come on, when's Jeff going to get a break here? We started off with, what was it, The Age of Aquarius was our first song, and then...
Were you naked?
No.
Body suits? It was hair, after all.
Okay. Yeah, I know, but no. And then we did that Madonna dance song. Yeah, and I didn't know it was a Madonna song at the time because we just had the dance part. But at the very least, like, for me personally, is that because I was also doing theater in college at the time, which, by the on a personal note, like, this was the low time? No, not a low time in my life, because it was, I don't know if you've ever had those stretches where for that period of maybe 2 or 3 weeks, my schedule was I'd wake up at 5 to get to my 6:15 shift, work 6:15 to 3, then I'd drive from there to school where I have my college classes, and then I'd have rehearsal after that, then I would drive from that back to Disneyland where I would have rehearsal until midnight, and then I would drive home and usually get between 3 or 4 hours of sleep before heading right back to work again. So that was a lot. But the positive side is that it did make me feel like I am no dancer, but it did feel like if I just do these things enough, like, my body will physically do these motions. So it gave me a lot of confidence as far as... I later went on to choreograph various different dance things at our college. So it was a growing experience for me.
I'm actually surprised. Like, I don't know if that was during, like, the interim period where I was not at the park or something, because it seems like something I would have wanted to participate in, because I will say that every post-Disney job that I've had, I have performed in my office.
It's so
somehow.
True.
Like, whether it was, like, you know, if there was, like, a talent show going on within the company or a karaoke contest, or even, like, I used to be in charge of our company events for this last corporation I worked for, and so I would literally, like, they would count on me to come up with some, like, parody song, or I'd come in character and costume, you know, like, I was the entertainment for the event, you know. So to have done that in a Disney setting, the only thing I can think is that I maybe was feeling a little bit inadequate. I didn't quite have Jeff's participatory spirit. I'm like, I don't know, I probably not as good as these people. I don't need to go out for this and embarrass myself. So you never know. There could have been an element of that in there. Yeah, all the dancing. Oh, dancing. Anyway, so one of the other things, Jeff, that we didn't talk about ahead of time, but I was just remembering that I feel like does fall into this category was that Disney had basketball teams.
An intramural basketball league. It didn't have to be each department, but yeah, the different departments, if you wanted to put together a team, we would play, yeah, against each other.
Well, so I think it's worth mentioning, given the recent Maverick trailer that dropped, Jeff, what was your team's theme?
Oh, yeah, we were Top Gun, which I don't think any... I mean, I guess the other teams had team names, and they weren't... I mean, some of the boring ones are like Custodial. It's like, come on, dude. No, so we were Top Gun. Each one of us had different call signs. So then, because I was on the team, I think, for 3 years, and the second year I became the captain slash coordinator. Not that I was any good at basketball. I just was the only one willing to put the team together. And so being a young single guy who was still living with my parents, like I had free money to spend. So I went to Chick's and I actually got us custom made jerseys that each had our call sign on the back. And I left them actually with the guy who took over for me. So hopefully they're still 15 years later. I hope they're still playing with those jerseys.
What, you're not even going to reveal who you were, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. No, I was Merlin. Goose was what I wanted my nickname to be in high school. But no, right. I was Merlin because I love Magic Johnson. So I was number 32. So I was Merlin. And then we had, like, yeah, Maverick and Iceman. And then we really had to look in because, you know, like, after you get past the first main characters, then you get... like Hollywood, okay, and then you get into whatever Tim... Well, I guess Tim Robbins' character was Merlin. I think so. Anyway. Yeah, so that was... And actually, that was a big thing for me, because not only did we have the basketball team, but we did also have a softball team. I love baseball, so that was awesome for me to be able to play the softball team. I dragged Nikki along at one point, even though she hated softball. And so, yeah.
Well, and I think it's also worth mentioning, and I don't know if this came, you know, if it's a chicken or the egg scenario, but with the basketball, during this period in your life, tearaway basketball warm-up pants were basically your standard mode of dress.
Well,
I feel like
no.
You wore them pretty much all the time.
No, I wore them, because I wore them, one, I did buy them for the basketball team, because I was like, wow, this actually makes sense now, but it made
now,
even more
see,
sense.
Now,
now as a basketball player, but it made even more sense, I thought, in the character department, because I think we covered before, like, I started wearing my own clothes as underdressings, so instead to have sweatpant-looking pants, I would, yeah, so I that would be my standard attire. At work, that was not my leisure wear. I wasn't just cruising the town in tear-offs.
You went on the, if you've watched our social media, guys, and you've seen the picture I posted of Jeff with Dana Sue, who was our belly dancing Pluto friend, his adoptive Disney mother. In that picture, he is wearing tearaway basketball pants,
yeah,
and
I
a flannel shirt and a puka shell necklace. I mean, like, Jeff,
well,
what were you
the
doing?
The puka shell is the one that she gave me, but it was because I was coming from work. I should point out, and that was the one thing I just remembered that I know you, obviously you were not a part of, and I never got to be a part of, but another one that was maybe even bigger than the basketball and the softball leagues was they did also have canoe racing all through the summer. Before the park opened, they would have different teams that would race canoes around Tom Sawyer's Island, and that was a really big deal.
Now, the one thing I was trying to recall, Jeff, is, and again, you were there longer than me, but I don't know if you qualified for anything. Were there actual performance awards that were not, like, AFISAB related, like, that were just from the corporate entity that said, you know, you've done a great job, so therefore you get this certificate, or you get this type of recognition, or you get this pin, or five-year pin, or something?
Yeah.
Did not exist?
Right. Well, there's two... parts is that one, as far as like an official recognition thing, the character department themselves came up with character of the month, where it was like highlighting different performers and stuff like that. But when you got to do a different one every single month, year after year, like eventually, and it was at least two of them a month, like eventually it was kind of like, yeah, a lot of people won that. So it was not quite as special, but it was at least, which, and I do have to admit, like they did give that to me 1 month. So that was a big deal. I was very honored by that.
And what form did it take?
So they give you a certificate, and literally it was just like an unofficial thing from the character department. In fact, I don't even think it was from management. I think it was from just like probably the people that put together AFISAB, where it's just kind of like, hey, let's kind of do this. Is this okay, management? Yeah, sure. And then they did post it up in various break rooms, so you could see like who the characters of the month are and stuff like that. So, but as far as like service awards, yeah, they definitely do. I mean, we were talking about with the infamous Goofy balancing it on his nose maneuver. That was a service award for being there for a certain amount of years. And they make a bigger and bigger deal. Like after you've been there for a year, you get, actually, I think a year you just get, I think they update your ID card or something like that. It's not much. Or maybe they give you a button. But then
yeah,
5 years.
Is there something that goes on your name tag?
After one? Oh, maybe that's what it was. Maybe you get a little pin on your name tag. And then after 5 years is a bigger deal, 10, 15, 20, like it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you get kind of get a bigger, you know, statue or something like that. And they all know, I mean, you could talk to a veteran and they all know exactly what's coming. Like I'm just, you know, 2 years away from the Tinkerbell or, you know, from the Jiminy Cricket statue or whatever it is.
So now also falling into the performance category that I, again, never got to participate in this, but it fascinated me to no end, were the character department movies. Mm-hmm. So this was a situation where, you know, go back to the 80s, you know, when a camcorder was easier to come by, you know, something you could bring around. The character department would actually, with the character costumes, create films, a lot of times parodies of existing movies, so that there's, you know, been a lot over the years that have been rumored that I heard about, and a few of them are even available on YouTube now, at least in snippets, which back in the day, these were like talked about in hushed, whispered tones. Like the veterans would kind of tell you, oh yeah, so back in the day we did this thing. Oh, were you going to bring in the video? Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. And you'd really have to work on them. But the one time I actually got to see one of these things was a film from 1987 called Captain Eeyore.
Yep.
And so this is a big deal, as many people know. Captain EO was a 3D experience starring Michael Jackson. My friend had some of the stuffed animals growing up, and I was super jealous. So, but Captain Eeyore was, as you can imagine, the titular Eeyore taking on the Michael Jackson role, but it was a literal adaptation. It was a full-length parody, because that movie itself is only like 12, 13 minutes long. So, you know, you gotta keep people moving, everybody gets a chance to watch it. It's just an extended music video. So that's what they have going on here. You have Captain Eeyore, he's got his crew. So Tweedledee and Tweedledum are like the Siamese twin characters. I don't know all the Captain EO characters. The robot guy was played by Tigger. Pooh was Hooter. You know, so there's just a lot of like craziness going on in there. But probably my favorite moment of it, and you know, the most iconic, is towards the end when they arrive and they're supposed to give the gift to the evil queen. The evil queen is dressed up like Mickey Mouse, has like Mickey ears, but it's just like a painted face with like, you know, a little black cloud nose and big long nails. Oh, you think me beautiful? You know, the whole thing. And then when they transform her through the power of music, she turns into Snow White, you know, and her minions are like the seven dwarves. And my favorite, in Captain EO, there's these guys that come out, they're all freaky, and they got these whips, and they're like whipping people, and they're whipping Captain EO, and he like grabs onto their whips and he zaps them and transforms them. In this case, it was the Queen of Hearts. So they had a bunch of Queen of Hearts coming out with whips and they're whipping Eeyore. And then basically, like, they transform. I believe they were supposed to be the chimney sweeps from Mary Poppins when they transformed. So anyway, it was an amazing video. And so to watch that in the break room at Goofy's Kitchen, I felt like I was finally being accepted, you know, that I finally got to see a glimpse of it, that something nobody else is ever going to see. And then now it's on YouTube.
It's true. Well, because those are AFISAB videos. That was, they would make one for each AFISAB. And there was actually one guy who was interested in film that would make them every single year. And I remember, like you said, Adam, it was a really big deal that the company allowed him to do that, because he would come in and they would like ask to borrow the costume so that they would shoot like on look, you know, at the park.
Yeah, they'd shoot
when the
like
park
in the
closed.
Service tunnels.
Oh yeah,
and
it was it was with the understanding that these never get out, right? Because if these get out, you are fired. So the fact that these are out now, I hope he's okay. Maybe he's already gone, and so he was like, well, I'm out of here now. But I think he had to sign, like, releases and stuff like that. And it's interesting, like, the legend of specifically Captain Eeyore was the guy who actually performed as Eeyore, because it's basically, like Adam said, it's the whole Captain EO show with Eeyore as Michael Jackson. That guy apparently was obsessed with Captain EO, and that during every single one of his breaks, he would sit in there and watch it over and over and over again until he memorized every single move. And apparently, according to most people, like, he was not the greatest of characters, but he had that down, like, those moves down. You watch Eeyore, if you can see those clips, and he has every single Michael Jackson move down pat.
Yeah, and I mean, and there were others, like, again, like, there's another video, if you look it up, it's called Disney Girl, and it's basically a parody of Madonna's Material Girl with Alice, but she's got kind of like a Tina Turner wig on, and she's dancing around with all these Tweedledums and Tweedledees all around. I think that one was actually filmed at Disney World, but okay. It's still a pretty fun video. But again, it's like late 80s, and you're just watching it, you're like, wow, because it was hard to do that stuff back then. I mean, you really had to have some sort of editing equipment to make it at least somewhat decent to watch.
And he did, like, because Captain Eeyore has, you know, special effects. And I remember, like, when I was there, because what was it? It was, and usually it was very topical. So it wasn't, you know, it was Captain Eeyore when Captain EO was huge. So I remember the first AFISAM I went to in 99, it was the Bear Witch Project. So they did a Blair Witch thing, but it was, you know, so the whole thing of, like, the up close shaky cameras in the, and it was the Country Bears. So it was in their faces and stuff. And then they did one right after the next year, I guess it would have been, after California Adventure opened, that was like the California Adventure characters rebelling against the Disneyland characters. And then it had to end up being Mickey ended up in a lightsaber battle against one of our supervisors. And
that's the part I remember the most, because there was a guy who was editing it, and he had his laptop in a break area once, and he was working on it. He's like, I'm not supposed to show you this, but check this out. This is awesome. And I got to see Mickey in the Jedi robes with the lightsaber. I was like, oh. And then again, I didn't go to AFISAM, so I didn't get to see the full video. I'm like, why did I not do this? But did you ever get to participate in any of those, Jeff, as they were filming?
And I mean, the tough part was, too, is that they were all, you know, like, right before the park opens or after the park closes. And especially, like, with me over at Goofy's Kitchen at 6:15, like, that was... I do remember there were some times where, like, we got there at 6:15 at the same time as the people that were going to film that got there, but we had to go to work they never asked anyway, but even if they would have, I was been on it.
Just in case you guys are gonna ask, it's not gonna work for me. but yeah, so if nothing else from today's episode, you now are aware of Captain Eeyore. I know there was one they said that was called Failure, and I don't know what that was a parody of, but it was more recent. But there's a few screen captures, because it went up for like a week and then got taken down. But it mostly starred the princesses, and they all had like these laser guns and stuff, so it was like kind of a heavy-duty action star princess film. And people were like begging, like, oh, somebody put that up again so we could see it. So yeah, very, very fun, those character department movies. It sounds like still on some level, but I have to believe if that's happening, it's very unauthorized somehow, because yeah, with YouTube and everything else these days, there's pretty much no way it's not gonna get out there, at least for a brief period. So all right, well, thank you so much once again for being here with us to hear a little bit more about the character experience. Again, there's just it's kind of a crazy life to live behind the scenes, and we had a lot of fun, even if we weren't participating in every single event that took on, if we weren't allowed entrance into the inner circle. Occasionally we got our due and got a little bit of recognition or chance to participate, so that's great. But I will say that next time around, we are going to be talking to you about character special events. So these were getting into costume for, you know, whether it was, you know, taking a show on the road or for something in the park, you know, that was maybe a company event or maybe was something, you know, private that characters were going to be involved in. There's a lot of different ways that we could bring this about. We're also going to be talking to you about the difference between the character department and the parades department, because that was a whole different world that we haven't really even gotten into very much. So we hope that you will join us again and come back for episode 9. And keep reaching out. You guys are doing such a great job. We really appreciate you spreading the word out there as you're turning your friends onto the show and then letting everybody on social media know about it as well. It's just great. You know, we're doing this just for fun, but we're glad that you're enjoying it just as much. So, until next time, bye.